Welcome to this month's special guest interview. This month, I'm very pleased to have Daniel Ha as my special expert guest. Daniel Ha is the founder and director of Talk Techniques Incorporated, a Vancouver-based company dedicated to providing group seminars and one-on-one professional development support in the areas of professionalism, communication, and effective negotiation. Daniel has over 30 years' experience in human services management, holding such positions as the Director of Intergovernmental Affairs with the Federal Government of Canada, the Director of British Columbia's Forensic Psychiatric Hospital, Provincial Executive Director of the John Howard Society of Alberta, Director of the British Columbia Criminal Justice Association, Director of Verbal Judo Canada Limited, and Manager of Community Policing for the British Columbia Ministry of Attorney General. In the personal development area, Daniel is a fitness personal trainer certified through the British Columbia Recreation and Parks Association. Welcome, Daniel. It's great to have you here as my guest on SNU.
Thank you, Corey. It's a delight to talk with you as usual.
Now, what I'd like to do is maybe talk a little bit about you on a personal level. Maybe we can go back in time. Tell me how you got started in your career. Tell me what your dreams and ambitions were maybe when you were younger and how it led to what you're doing today.
Well, that's a good question, Corey. Whenever I have to give people a bit of background on me, I'm always reminded of my father, who was 79 years of age, who in typical fashion worked for the same company for 45 years doing the same thing. He could never understand me. He said, basically, what's the matter? Can't you hold a job? If you see by the introduction, I've held several positions over the last 35 years of employment, starting off in the business field, actually, when I got a certificate in business administration and spent 5 years in that. Was, you know, doing okay, but not really fulfilled. Thought I might want to go into law. Went to university, got an undergraduate degree in economics. Then had to work a bit to, you know, prepare financially for law school. Ended up getting a position working in the federal penitentiary system in Kingston. From there, decided that law maybe wasn't best for me and have spent the last 30 years working in the human services area, mainly in the management area. And that's a kind of a nebulous term, management, but not doing front lines so much intervention with clients and patients, which I did initially, but moving into the management. In other words, where is the organization going? Where do we want to be in 5 years, 10 years? How are we going to get there? Kind of that future horizon staring kind of exercise. So I stayed in the human services area primarily because it interests me. I think I have particular skill sets that I hope and I believe have made a contribution. And I just found it, for me, it was a passion. I enjoyed getting up every morning and going in and seeing what I can contribute that day. And so I suppose that's what's kept me going for 30 years in a difficult area of work. Law enforcement can be challenging and at times off-putting because you're dealing with crisis on a almost an hourly basis of one description or another. So you have to keep yourself up. You have to keep yourself focused. What am I doing? Why am I here? And not become despondent about what you may be in the middle of and can't have an answer for, maybe everybody's satisfaction at that particular time. So that's pretty well summarized why I did what I did for the last 30 years or so. I now have my own company where I do these seminars, mainly because I found in my previous positions working with other organizations that communication, simple communication between staff, between colleagues, communication between staff and customers and clients was an area in most organizations that simply needs a lot of attention. And for some reason or other, I seem to have an interest in that and, a certain ability in that area. And so I sat down and put pen to paper and researched Aristotle's writings of 2,400 years ago and put together the Talk Techniques material. And that's what I've been doing for the last 5 years now.
Well, that's fantastic. That's a great story. The thing that stood out to me is working in the federal penitentiary. Now, what is that like?
Well, initially it was absolutely frightening. Having never been a client on the receiving end of services, you walk in as basically a somewhat naive young person wanting to help out. And very quickly you're introduced to dynamics in that particular setting, which can be frightening, confusing. And so you very quickly have to develop a clear sense of who am I? What am I doing here? Why do I think I can make a contribution? And am I making a contribution, whether it's to the individual across the table that you're talking to or to the organization at large? And so sorting that out in a very tense, at times, a very tense environment where you're dealing with individuals that may be quite hostile. They don't want to be there. And you may be seen as a symbol of their incarceration. So they're maybe not relating to you as an individual. They're relating to you as a symbol of oppression. And so that's a very difficult environment to try and be comfortable in and try and establish rapport, honest rapport with people. So that was kind of a totally new experience for me. This is back in my late 20s, actually, when I went in there. And I thought I was reasonably, you know, grounded and reasonably experienced, et cetera. And I very quickly found out I was treading water, very quickly. The education I'd had up to that point, the life experience I'd had up to that point, really didn't equip me to go in there and function to my satisfaction. So that caused me to really reflect on a daily basis since that point. What am I doing? Why am I doing it this way? And is there a better way of doing it? And if I'm making a contribution, fine. If I'm not, get out of the way and let somebody else in here. So, yeah, it was an accelerated learning experience from a personal awareness standpoint, that's for sure.
Sounds like it. Now let's talk a little bit about talk techniques. I noticed on your website that you have three sections or categories. First one is called The Art of Supervision. The next is The Art of First Response and The Art of Positive Interaction. Maybe you can explain the difference between each category.
Yeah, all of the courses that I have are all based on the same principles. Again, going back to the writings of Aristotle 2,400 years ago when he wrote about rhetoric, back when rhetoric had a very positive connotation, it was the art of persuasion, how to actually engage your audience, how to put what's in your head, the images, the meaning, the symbolism, etc., in your head and put it into your audience's head so that there's an exchange. Largely good storytelling. And in my opinion, not a whole lot of new stuff has been written since Aristotle put pen to papyrus 2,400 years ago in the area of communication. So I went back to that material and researched it and looked at the underpinnings of rhetoric and the art of persuasion. And that underlies all of my courses. For example, the rules of engagement, no matter what the context, whether you're a supervisor, supervising staff in an environment, whether you're a frontline worker, whether you're in law enforcement, whether you're even dealing with family members, spouses, children, the principles are consistent of communication. In other words, know what you're doing, know why you're doing it, and know how to do it. And I go through a series of, I call them rules of engagement. It almost has a military connotation, but I think it's very important to know what principles upon which you base your behavior. And are you performing consistently with those principles? If you're not, why not? I mean, there may be a very logical reason why you've decided to step outside of your principles and your values that you so strongly say you hold. But generally, most people should be operating within those principles. So it's Art of Supervision, set up for supervisors, specific to that context. I found most frontline supervisors have never been really given the training opportunity to become supervisors. They're one of the boys or one of the girls one day. Next thing you know, they're a supervisor now. Well, the relationships changes. Have they got the proper support from management to support them in their new role? Have they got the training courses to give them the skill sets, the proper mental attitude, the verbal skill sets, body language, etc.? Art of First Response I set up for basically folks who are just trying to get voluntary compliance with somebody, like security officers, police officers, that type of situation, where you're there trying to enforce a set of rules or laws and do it in a way that doesn't cause the situation to erupt. The art of positive interaction is more of a negotiation model where you have an ongoing relationship with somebody. It could be a customer, client, a coworker, spouse, where it's more long-range relationship building, interviewing, how to get information from people, where you've got an extended timeline as opposed to just a very short intervention with someone. So depending on the context and the needs of the client and the needs of the individual, I kind of focus the examples for that pertinent context.
Sounds like you've got everything covered. And it sounds also as if the information that you present is very practical, that the average person, no matter what they do, could benefit from taking.
Well, I hope so. It's not an academic exercise. I'm not an expert on Aristotle, so there's no point in me even pretending to talk in that type of language, in that kind of academic way. So it's boiling those thoughts down to give some people some very hands-on a way of thinking and a way of performing that they'll remember, particularly under high-stress situations. Under high-stress situations, people tend to get brain freeze. They either fight or flight. They either get aggressive, if that's your natural inclination, and escalate a situation, a difficult situation, or they flight. They basically back off, run away. It's based on emotion, fear, anger, insecurity, who knows? I mean, there's a whole host of reasons for that. And the trick is to come up with a third option, which is a focused professional performance, even if you are petrified under the circumstances, even if you are feeling overwhelmed under the circumstances, as long as it's safe for you to stay there, do you have a framework for trying to engage that difficult audience, that difficult person? And that's what I try to teach, is to give people a third option, not instinct, fight or flight, but focused professional performance. Acting is really what it is. It's an acting course. Inside, you may be feeling, oh my God, I'm in over my head here. What do I do? Well, maybe I'll just go home. Well, that's probably not a good option for most professionals in a professional setting. I mean, you're paid to deal with issues and problems. So what do we revert to? Well, let's revert to our training, not our instincts of fight or flight. And that's what I think I try to do, is give people that information.
Reminds me of the natural instincts that we have inherently within us. Maybe we have a tendency to be lazy and not execute physical exercise or training. And so what you're saying is that there is this logical approach to living that you can draw from the mind, something that you can rehearse, train for, and develop by studying the information. And then when you're in that situation, you can apply it because you've got the background.
I mean, that to me is so fundamental to life. Why do we spend so much emphasis on schooling? I mean, we're trying to impart a way of thinking. We're trying to impart information. We're trying to train people to make a living, feel good about themselves, participate in society. Okay, well, how do you do that? Well, precisely that. You give them information. You give them reinforcement. Something that you and Tracy do in the area of sport nutrition is vital. It's crucial. How can you perform to your potential if you're not feeding the machine properly? If you're a high-performance race car, you don't put in water into the gas tank. You've got to have the fuel there.
Yes.
Because the fuel is going to determine how you perform, how you feel. It's a major component of performance. And for that, you have to have information. You have to know, well, what is the proper fuel? Because there's all kinds of improper fuel out there. I mean, look around. Every street corner has fast food, which is, the equivalent of putting water into a high-performance gas tank. So, the work that you're doing to me is just crucial. You've got to have the information, and then it's your choice. You informed consent is all I'm asking. If you listen to the Talk Techniques material and it makes sense to you and you can internalize it and you can use it and you feel good about it and it gives you the results you're looking for, A-okay. Same with you. You try to give people information. If they choose to ignore it, well, fine. I mean, you go your own way. If you're comfortable with the results and you know what you're doing, why you're doing it, and how to do it, but you choose to go your own way, it's your choice.
So you would agree then that everyone has that ability within themselves to actually make a choice, that it is a choice that they're making?
Well, I think that's the best we can hope for. There may be intervening variables why people can't or won't. I mean, maybe they just need more encouragement, more one-to-one support. Who knows? Maybe there's some mental health issues. There's all kinds of intervening variables. But in an ideal world, hopefully you give people clear, concise information in a way that they can understand it and appreciate it. But those that can just quickly run with it, great. For those that, for whatever reason, can't seem to pick it up or won't pick it up, well, maybe they need just a little more ongoing support, a little more encouragement, a little time to think about it, etc. You know, we're all different. We all have different contexts we're coming from and experiences. I'm predisposed to listening to information such as you present, and the way you present it makes sense to me, and it's presented in a way that I hook up with very quickly, and I learn from it, and then I change my behavior. Other folks, maybe they're just not ready for whatever reason. I'm not there to judge them. Just, you know, whatever. It's your life. It's your decision. I'll meet you halfway, anytime, anywhere on the information side of it. But at some stage of the game, you got to grab the baton and you got to run with it. So another sports analogy there.
Now, the issue of communication, I just can't help thinking how big that is in society, with kids in the sandbox, with kids in the classroom, with people in universities, in the workplace, people engaging every day. Why is it that people have such difficulty expressing themselves or communicating with how they feel to each other?
Well, that's a big question, and I think a lot of it comes down to maybe they're not getting the right role model in their life at that particular time that can show them that there are boundaries to behavior, acceptable sort of behavior, and if you step outside of those boundaries, anticipate that this is something that could happen. So knowing boundaries, knowing why you're pushing the boundaries, I mean, adolescence is basically pushing the envelope all the time. Having had two adolescents, I mean, they're testing, push the envelope a bit, see what happens. And as an adult, as a parent, you know, and when you feel that the envelope is just being pushed just a little too far, a little too fast, and particularly if it's a possible danger, you got to go in. You got to go in and say, well, okay, this is my opinion on this matter. This is, give them the information of what you think and why you think it. Try and get them to work with you. Because let's face it, anything you do has an implication for somebody else, whether it's a spouse, a child, and it's vice versa. Whatever a child does has implication for a parent. So it's kind of a teamwork thing. And are they fully aware of their behavior and their effect of their behavior on others? So trying to, you know, make empathy, I guess you'd call it, trying to instill a sense of empathy that the world doesn't entirely just revolve around you. And then giving them the specific, I guess that's self-awareness, and then giving them specific skill sets of taking their ideas and their wants, etc., and giving them the verbal skill sets to talk about those ideas with others, to try and share their thoughts, not jam them down their throat, but to share them, to get feedback, try and get people to work with you. I mean, it's one thing to have a good idea. It's another thing having the skill sets to present that idea to others, to try and have them consider your idea and maybe adopt it. Selling an idea, promoting an idea is, to me, crucial. Having the idea is also crucial, but there's a critical component there. And that takes some skill sets that, to me, are learned, very learned, sometimes the hard way. And I think that's why, you know, maybe there's a struggle. I know I had to learn a lot of things the hard way. You know, I have more scar tissue on my forehead from banging my head against the wall, from doing, oh, goodness me, I won't do that again. I wish I'd had a little more, maybe role modeling, positive information, some framework to refer to instead of just banging my head against the wall and learning it the hard way. Somehow I survived, but it would have been a lot less stressful, I think, if I had had a bit of an orientation that I could have referred to instead of just kind of jumping in and seeing where this goes. So maybe that's why folks are scrambling a bit. Our society today is very high pressured. Go, 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 fast, 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 money, money, money. patience seems to be in short supply out there. People want results. They want it now. So, you know, if you are a professional, and to me, anybody who works is a professional, because there's an expectation on your client's part. So whenever you've got an expectation, to me, you're a professional. They're expecting you to perform in a certain way. You better have the skill sets to be able to engage that client, to be able, particularly if something went wrong, because that's usually when things can either get back on track or, in most cases, they're destroyed. The relationship is destroyed. So it's you got to know what you're doing. I come back to that. You got to know what you're doing and why you're doing it. Do you have the competence? And can you explain it, what you did and why you did? Or you did it. So it's a stressful society out there. And I think, you know, as you noted, communication, I think, or lack thereof, is one of the major contributors to a high stress level. And knowing how to communicate without getting your ego in the way, without getting into an argument with somebody, without dismissing somebody, particularly if they're not being very nice in terms of their approach to you. That's the difference to me between a professional and an amateur. A professional can stay focused when things get tough. Anybody can look good when things are going well. When you're working with a very cooperative client or customer and things are just going fine. And that's great. But to me, the mark of a professional is when things start to get tense, what happens? Can you stay focused? Can you stay professional? Can you keep your ego under check here when you feel you're being challenged? Can you refocus the dialogue? Fred Haynes, one of your recent guests on the show here, talked about harmony in life. Can you maintain a sense of harmony in a context that is stressful? Now, that takes training, that takes focus, that takes discipline, that takes skill sets. And to me, that's the difference between a professional and an amateur. Amateurs have bad days. Professionals don't. Amateurs say, well, I'm just having a bad day. I don't know what that means. Professional says, well, okay, I stand back, assess the situation. This is what I saw. This is what I did. This is why I did it. It made sense at the time to them and to maybe others that are critiquing their performance. Doesn't mean there isn't room for improvement the next time the situation comes up. But, you know, they did the best they could referencing reasonable thought patterns. And that's what a professional to me is.
How important do you think is honesty in communication?
Well, to me, it's crucial. Most people can pick out, whether consciously or subconsciously, when they're being deceived. I think, they can pick it up whether they're aware of it or not from body language, possibly. They're just not comfortable with what's being told to them. They're not comfortable with the person. Listen to your instincts. I mean, that's crucial. I mean, we're animals. It hasn't been that long before we were, crawling through the jungle here. And we survived on our instincts. Now we have to listen to those instincts, but also now we have to just temper those instincts with some real focused professional skill sets to take those initial inkling of, something not right here, and try and find out what it is that's bothering you. And to do that, you know, you've got to be open. You've got to speak directly, honestly, not be judgmental. I'm not here to, ram my opinions down people's throat. I'm just here to say, here's some information. Here's a way of looking at a situation. If this seems to make sense to you, and hey, may the force be with you. If you've got another system that works for you, A-okay. Have a nice day.
So we shouldn't assume that people know how to communicate as they're going through the educational system. They actually need to be taught how to communicate. It reminds me of what Emerson said. He said that the hardest thing to do in the world is to think.
Excellent point. Hopefully the school system is teaching students how to think, how to be critical thinkers. Critical meaning not judgmental, but having the capacity to assess, what am I seeing here? And why am I, from what I'm seeing, why am I attaching a certain meaning to what I think I'm seeing? And then once I've done that, am I comfortable with my assessment? Am I missing something? Okay, if I'm comfortable with my assessment, now what am I going to do about it? And trying to engage that audience in a hopefully joint problem-solving kind of venture or information exchange. I'm very curious. I like to know why people think the way they think. I mean, opinions are like noses. Everyone has one. What I'm interested in is the thinking behind the opinion. That, to me, is the real insight into where this person is coming from. And maybe even who they are, what they value in life. And that's why I spent 30 years in the human service business, is trying to peel back the layers of the onion to find out why people think and behave the way they do.
It's like natural medicine, probing for cause, getting down to the root of the entire condition.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't just slap a Band-Aid on it and just say, okay, everything's fine now. We got to keep probing. You know, and to me, in the area of sports performance, crucial element is the fuel, the lifestyle. Maybe your performance is being inhibited by poor intake of nutrition, poor lifestyle, not enough sleep, too much stress in your life, overtraining, the wrong kind of training, wrong kind of food. I mean, there's a whole host of reasons. It's somewhat of a complex formula, but only through the sort of open and honest discussion that, you know, that you stimulate here in your forums here, can people really come to appreciate that and then design a plan for themselves with reference to the sort of au courant wisdom in that field.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the techniques that I read about on your website that really struck a chord with me was how to handle a complaint. I'm just thinking of myself years ago in the retail health food store, somebody walking in and they've got a bottle in their hand or a device they purchase and they want a return, they want a credit, but they've got a complaint of attitude or a complaint of mentality. Sometimes it's quite coarse. What is the best way to handle a complaint from, say, a dissatisfied customer?
Well, the first thing to me in handling a complaint is that you can either see it as a crisis or you can see it as an opportunity. It'll be a crisis if you're not sure how to stay focused to your own sort of approach and framework and principles and how to stay true to those. And can you draw on the communication skills to really deal with somebody who's maybe obnoxious, maybe a bully by nature, or maybe they're just so upset that, you know, they've Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, here they go. I mean, normally they're a nice person, but this really hit them and they're just, you know, they're just irate. So can you stay focused? And then it's not a crisis. It's an opportunity to try and engage with this client to find out exactly what it is. What were their expectations when they bought the product? And what was their experience in actually using the product? Who knows? Maybe they were given faulty information by someone when they bought the product. Someone maybe misled them. Or there was poor communication or whatever. So they may have had maybe an unrealistic expectation. They may not even be following the directions properly and the use of the product and the service. So you got to kind of get that information. Talk to them. The first thing you want to do in dealing with difficult people who are under stress like that is remember a couple of things. Number one, they want to be listened to. And they want to be treated as an individual. They don't want to be treated as a number. And so, you know, reasonable. I've had complaints of products that have upset me. So you're upset. Okay, so it's anticipate that that's what you're occasionally going to bump into. The only thing is, do you have the skill sets and the proper mental attitude to engage that audience? The next thing is, you got to be able to interview them to find out what are the facts from their standpoint. What is it about this product? Because you want to find that out. Because if the product is faulty and really is a scam or a sham, well, you don't want to be part of promoting it in the future. So sit down with them. We got a problem here. I'd really like to pick your brain here. Your experience is invaluable. Work with them. Find out exactly the specifics. So interview them. And then, you know, you got to verify the information, and that there's a whole framework model that they use for that kind of engagement. And then, you know, you can use some credibility phrases such as acknowledge their disappointment and frustration. Obviously they are. They bought a product, may have shelled out a lot of money. So, you know, commiserate with them. You know, just say, I can see that you're very frustrated with this situation. It lets them know that you are seeing them as an individual and that, you know, you quickly move on and you say, I don't want to apologize for any inconvenience or misunderstanding there may be in regards to this product. Do you mind if I just ask you a few questions just so that I can come to appreciate how you see this situation from your standpoint? Because it may help me in dealing with other customers and clients. I'm trying to provide the best service I can to folks like yourself. And as I say, your information is invaluable. Will you work with me on this? Do you mind if I ask you a few questions? So you recognize them and then you use their experience as an opportunity. They want to vent a bit. Okay, fine, vent a bit, but try and help them focus on the specifics of their disappointment. They want their issue resolved somehow. They don't want excuses. Well, you know, I've never had a problem with this product before. Whoa. That's not the kind of thing you want to be saying. They don't care. They have a problem with this product. So you never say that. You never demean their experience or their expectations, reasonable or unreasonable. So you got to initiate some kind of action. It may be giving them their money back. That may be, you know, so you have to know that information. What leeway do I have as an employee to solve problems? Can I give the money back? Can I send out a technician? Can I, whatever. You've got to be able to offer this client something, a credit their account, something to help them through this. If they're a regular client, you want to keep them as a regular client. You don't want to lose them over a $59 bottle of some kind of pill that didn't work for them. They may spend $10,000 a year in your store. So you got to be smart. And then finally, thank them for their input. Thank them very much for bringing this matter to our attention. As I said earlier, we're trying to provide the best service we can to our clients, our customers, and we value your input. Thank you very much for bringing it to my attention. Okay, that's a nice way to finish off the dialogue. So can you do that when you really don't like the person, let's say? You really don't like the way they're talking to you. You may not even like them as a person because they may be like that all the time. They may be belligerent. That's not the issue. The trick is, can you engage them? Can you move with their negative energy and try and bring this thing back into some kind of positive framework? It's all martial arts. You know, as Fred Haynes was saying, someone's going to throw negative energy at you. You got a choice to make. Either you're going to stand there like Rocky and take the hits and show them how tough you are, or you're going to move with the negative energy and you're going to let to maintain that harmony. There's an old samurai saying, you know, man throws spear at head, move head. So it's the same thing. Man throws spear of insult, move head. The insult goes by. It doesn't become an ego match. So you can't talk to me that way or yada, yada, yada. Oh, yeah? Watch me. And then you're into an ego bashing session. So you let the spear of insult go by, and you always want to respond to it a bit in a focused way by saying, you know, I can hear that you're very upset, and I really want to try and help you out in a situation. Do you mind if I ask you a few questions? So you recognize their anger, but you quickly try to bring it back into an area of focus and discussion that'll move this thing forward, hopefully. You don't want to become the problem. Right now they got a problem with this bottle of pills. The last thing you want to do through your action is now they focus on you because they don't like your attitude, because you're giving them back ego. Now you're the problem. Now that can be bordering on dangerous depending on the circumstances. So you don't want to do that. So you got to be able to move, but help them refocus. All of martial arts is built on the circle. Deflect and come back. Deflect, come back. And to me, communication is built on that, particularly if it's an assertive and aggressive kind of interaction.
Wow. Well, I can't believe we've reached our ceiling of time. I mean, there's so much more that I wanted to get into, and I could just sit down and spent hours listening to your advice, and I'm sure that you have really stimulated a lot of interest in our subscribers out there that listen to SNU every month. Now, before we let you go, and before we bring this interview to a conclusion, maybe tell us about your seminars and how to get involved and how to contact you if you want to pursue this.
Yeah, perhaps the best way is to go to our website. It's www.talktechniques, all one word, talk, T-A-L-K, techniques, TECHNIQUES.com. You can see the courses. I'm also introducing a one-on-one. The courses for the last 5 years have been group types of sessions going into an organization. I don't offer them to the general public, mainly because it's too difficult. You get 20 people in a room and they're 20 different backgrounds, 20 different companies. Some are there for personal reasons. Some are there. It's just too dispersed. So, the groups so far have been specific to a particular work environment. And now I'm going to introduce a one-on-one kind of professional development support, or sit down with the individual. You tell me where you're at, where you want to go, and we'll come up with a little bit of a plan, maybe 5 one-hour sessions to explore several areas that we can look at. Some people will do better on one-on-one as opposed to groups. So through the website, you can contact me. My email is there, and be happy to talk to anyone at any time.
And your toll-free number is 888-881-5822?
Correct.
Good. So for those of you that have an interest, I know I sure do, get on that website, talktechniques.com, and give it some time and pursue this matter if you want to improve any area of your life, such as communication and interaction with other people. Daniel, thanks a lot for taking the time today. I've really, really enjoyed it, for you being our special guest on this edition of SNU. And before you go, I always ask each special guest maybe for a final word, a departing word of inspiration, maybe a word of advice that you could share with our listeners.
Well, that's a good one. I'm always reminded of John F. Kennedy, one of my favorite speakers, actually, who said, things don't just happen, you have to make them happen. And I think that's a kind of a good way to approach any life situation, is that just don't sit back and be a passive kind of passenger here. Figure out what do you want to do in this situation, and what do you need to help you go where you want to go. Find those resources and then get at it.
Daniel Ha, the founder and director of Talk Techniques Incorporated, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
This concludes this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. We hope you have enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview. SNU is produced monthly and is a division of Holly Health Services, located in Burnaby, British Columbia. For details regarding subscription, please visit CoreyHolly.com. This is Doug Austin, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent your lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU, sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHolly.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.